No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Welcome, Arizona Cardinals fans, once again to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It's quarterback week, apparently, in Cardinals land. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today sports media group NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. Seth Cox, my co-host on the line, is also running. He runs his com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site. For those of you who have been following the show for a long time, that is the site that I once ran. He also is the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. And this is if there's a time of year for you guys to be listening to that podcast, it would definitely be now. And the last several months, they've had some great shows ranking defensive backs, talking draft with other draft analysts out there. If you want to get familiar with draft prospects, you know, potential, you know, what is it, their spark, the spark stuff, and what's the one that Justin and Justice really, it's the
Force players.
Force players, yes, that's the other one. You learn all about that. I mean, if you've not followed the NFL draft nearly enough and it's something you want to do, it's definitely an NFL, it's a draft podcast you definitely want to get to yourself listening to. You can find it, you know, SoundCloud, NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. You can find it on Seth's website as well. But Seth, how are things going as we now are, we are full on draft and we're getting all sorts of information. It's almost too much information. Most of it's probably not real information at all.
Yeah, that's, I text you with some of the things I get. I talk to you about it, but I'm not one of those people that likes to be like, oh, this is what I'm hearing, because I think 99.9% of it's just made up or agents passing along information that they're trying to, you know, just get attention for their players. Not that the NFL cares, but, you know, they like to stir things up. So I think that's what a lot of it is. So I text you.
Well, and we have, and yes. he just got out on Twitter, started throwing things out there at the haters, how he's going to do. And Patrick Mahomes, who apparently not only has the best arm in the draft, but is incredibly accurate, as he can drop a football into a trash can from however many yards away from a second story. Like Carson Palmer should be why I just posted this on the site. You know, I think he would be the winner of the weekly bucket challenge, I would think, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. He's very accurate. He can throw the ball deep. We talked about him last week. He's the most interesting prospect to watch from a what happens standpoint, because he's not a prototypical quarterback. He comes from the air raid offense. He has so many things working against him that you'd like to see him succeed. So we can start to see a little differential in our quarterbacks and how we scout them and how we evaluate them. Because, you know, it gets old waiting for the next Andrew Luck every single year.
Right. Totally. And, you know, Tonight, recording on a Tuesday night, so you'll probably be hearing this Wednesday, Thursday, or sometime later in the week. This show, number 154, is, we've been doing this for a long time, show 154. This is our second draft preview show. Last week, we talked about quarterbacks, the rest of the offense. So we're going to go over different positions. We did the skill positions, the offensive line. But before we do that, things that's going on in Cardinals land in the NFL draft, because it is, and here's the information that we know so far. We know that the Cardinals already had a private visit. So Davis Webb, California's Davis Webb, was the first player we knew about to have multiple visits from the Cardinals. So they got to his pro day or something or other, but they also had him for one of the official 30. Now, this week is apparently quarterback week because Monday they had DeShone Kizer in for a workout. That was one of their official visits, the second time that they had met with him. Monday night, reported that Mitchell Trubisky, North Carolina's Mitch Trubisky, was seen by people with not just one guy, but all of the Cards' big brass. They're big names. General Manager Stephen Keim and Coach Bruce Arians were seen with dinner at a local steakhouse. And then Wednesday, and I believe it was reported by one of our local radio hosts here that Deshaun Watson arrive on Tuesday night. So they were bringing in this is the quarterback week. And so got DeShone Kizer, you've got Mitch Trubisky, Mitchell with Mitch, however he's going to go by now, and DeShone Watson, and the one guy. And if there's anything to read into, it's what, Seth? It's the one guy who we know we have not heard has had an official visit yet.
Right. Not one of the official 30, Pat Mahomes, after he got the entire kind of brass to his private workout. Private workout is a different from a official 30 visit. I don't know how. I'm not going to try to break that down, but it allegedly is different than an official 30 visit. And so that's kind of where we're at right now, trying to figure out what are they doing? Is it throwing off the scent of their entry in Mahomes, or do they really not like Mahomes, or have they just scheduled it for later
Thursday or Friday? Next,
yeah, 2 weeks. So there,
or maybe it's happened and no one's. There's always that possibility as well.
Yeah. So I mean, we have a lot of different avenues, routes to go with this, but I do think it is intriguing that we know of four names of the top five quarterbacks, you know, within this class. And we're still waiting on the other one. So again, is it, you know, as Wolfley likes to say, subterfuge, or is it really that they're just kind of like, okay, we're going to wash our hands of this one. We'll go to the next one. And neither of those things would actually shock me, because that's just how the NFL works. I mean, they make decisions based on the information they have and what they do and how things go in those private kind of workouts. And, you know, honestly, if they weren't enthused or overly excited with Mahomes, even though the reports were he killed it, then, you know, they're going to kind of move on to the next guy. And that'll be, you know, the one thing that we as Cardinals fans will have to appreciate, whether or not, you know, we agree with them, you have to appreciate them, you know, doing their due diligence. But then if they don't feel right about it, you know, backing off right away, because that's the one thing we've, you know, kind of talked about quite a bit, is you have to be comfortable putting your franchise in this player's hands moving forward, especially for a young player. And for the Cardinals, you know, if that does mean, you know, a flat no to a guy like Mahomes, I disagree with that from a on-field perspective, but they went, met with them, talked to them, have, you know, a lot more information. And I respect that they, you know, have moved on. And if that's what they are in fact doing.
And here's the interesting part of it, of all the quarterback talk. It's, this is all on the heels, all these official visits, which makes you want to talk more about the quarterbacks, is the fact that the report came out last week after the new mock draft from ESPN came out, when Kiper said Patrick Mahomes would be the guy at number 13, and Todd Meshay said it would be Trubisky at 13. John Gamadoro's report came out and said he says that neither one of those players will be picked by the Cardinals at number 13. Essentially, and he said he's not backed down from this. Is it's about, he's 95% sure, based on what he's heard, is that they're not going to draft any quarterback at number 13. That if they do, it would be on a trade back, which leads us to, which is the discussion for, you know, about last week, I wrote about to say pick 20 quarterback that you feel that you like that's going to be a starter, if you feel that he's worth a first round pick, matter if he's number 20 or number 13. That's the part that I don't get, because if quarterback, they should draft him. There's some defensive players, that's reportedly what it is. They have defensive players that they really like and would actually rank above him. But if you think about it, quarterback that you think could be the future, why wouldn't you draft him? Because you can replace almost any other position.
Right. And the other thing is, we've seen this team with top quarterback play, how far they can go, even with the holes in it. And so now you have to ask yourself, are you going to be able to recapture top quarterback play from Carson Palmer again? Or, so do you really think that drafting a guy, we'll just throw a name out there that Gambo threw out, you know, a Reuben Foster at 13, is he really going to be the difference maker in a Super Bowl? Well, if he is, that means that Carlos Dansby's not playing. And that means that you're running out there two inside linebackers that weigh under 230 pounds. So that's going to be a really interesting matchup to see when it gets into the playoffs and you're facing teams that love to run the football, like the Cowboys, like the Falcons, like the Panthers, and like the Seahawks. So that'll be what's interesting to see there. Maybe it's Hassan Reddick. You're talking about a guy that has never played the position before. So you're really, you know, leaning on a guy being able to transition to an off-ball position in a 3-4 defense in the NFL very quickly, and relying on him to be that much of a difference maker. Bottom line to you and I, we don't see maybe that the holes on the team can be filled by a player in this draft to the level where you're saying, oh, they're going to take the next step. We see a lot of young guys that could do that are already on the team. Kimdiche, you know, obviously we'd like to say Deion Buchanan take the next step. Obviously Ty Matthews staying healthy, Brandon Williams, you know, all of these guys, we see them more integral in what they do than a player at 13, you know, replacing one of them.
Right. And so, you know, we talked a lot about the quarterbacks last week. We're going to turn our attention to the other offensive positions. That's what we're going to talk about. That's what the duration of the show is going to be. We're going to talk about the offensive side of the ball. We're going to start first with running backs. We're going to go to the wide receiver position. Actually, we're going to lead with wide receivers. That's the other position of concern in terms of national media. So we're going to talk receivers first. We're going to talk running back. We're going to talk tight end. And then lastly, we'll go over the offensive line, which may or may not be – maybe or may not be the positions of need in terms of order. So that's what's coming up on the rest of the show here on this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Show. Let's go ahead and get started on talking wide receivers. Before the quarterback talk, wasn't it this offseason? And, you know, the wide receiver, I mean, they got Larry Fitzgerald coming back at least for another year. After that, they've added players. Bruce Arians said he's comfortable with the guys that he's got. But uncertainty beyond fit. So you've got John Brown coming back from his sickle cell trait. Jerron Brown coming back from, you know, ACL. J.J. Nelson, who's coming back from being 160 pounds and still is 160 pounds and has to, you know, he's had the injuries the past two seasons. He played the first part of last year in a broken thumb. Last season, Britton Golden, special teams guy. But after that, they added Aaron Dobson. They bring back Jeremy Ross. So it's not like, if you look from the outside, it's not exactly an awe-inspiring receiving core. in the offseason early on, the mock drafts, it wasn't about the quarterback. It was about finding Larry Fitzgerald's replacement, because at that point, no one knew whether he was coming back. So, you know, was the sexy pick to start off the offseason. Every once in a while, we've seen more Corey Davis. And then we talked about last week at the start of the show was how John Ross is now the new trendy pick for the Cardinals. But the receivers. So, first of all, we know that there's a trend with Bruce Arians and his teams in the first round. Do you think that trend will continue?
I do, because despite the unknowns of Brown, the fact that J.J. Nelson has a problem that I've never had and can't gain weight, and the unknown of Jerron Brown coming back from an ACL tear, you still have talent. It's a lot of unknown, but in the same way, the top two guys that have been mocked to the Cardinals, Corey Davis and John Ross, I don't know if you caught this today, but they were one of like a handful of players that went back to the combine for medical rechecks. So what are you getting? Like, and again, those are my top two receivers in the class, Davis one, Ross two. But, you know, if you're going to bet on a player overcoming injury or being healthy and knowing what you're going to get, I would take a John Brown over a John Ross 10 out of 10 times, because I've seen what John Brown can do in the NFL. I think I know what John Ross can do in the NFL.
You look at, yeah, he's fast and he really is a perfect fit, but you look at either one of those guys. If you want to look in terms of what they're looking for to replace Larry Fitzgerald, now what they saw from Michael Floyd is a guy who potentially could be that guy. Talent-wise, production-wise, body size, speed, they saw a player who could be that number one player. It didn't happen. Look at the receivers here. Corey Davis, I mean, he's your number one. Is he going to have a Larry Fitzgerald-type career, even in a 3 or 4 year span?
You know, that's what the question is. I like Davis, but you're betting on a guy that's coming from a smaller conference that did really well against, you know, smaller schools, had his worst outing statistically, and we're still talking about, you know, 80, 90, 100 yards and a touchdown, but had his worst outing statistically against, you know, the bigger competition. And, oh, by the way, we have no idea what type of athletic, you know, measurements he has. So we don't know what type of athlete he actually is. and then you look at maybe a guy like Mike Williams. You know, I've compared him to Michael Floyd. And it, people take that as an insult, but I'm comparing them as prospects coming out in that they both won the same way. They won contested catches. They were able to make plays when covered. The problem I always have with that is, why are you always covered? That's my question. I want a receiver that can win in his routes, not win in spite of his routes. So if you don't have, you know, John Brown speed, if you don't have, obviously nobody else has John Ross speed, but if you don't have that speed, you have to be able to win in your routes. Corey Davis does that extremely well. But again, what are we talking about production-wise? Are we going to be able to see a guy that's going to put up 85 catches and 1,200 yards? Is he going to be able to run the option route offense that Bruce Arians runs? Is he going to understand the sight adjustments that are required of him? Because we know at least one player who was in season four and was still making consistent mistakes on those. So, and again, this isn't saying that Corey Davis or Mike Williams or any of those guys couldn't do it, but that's asking a lot of a rookie, you know, or any young player coming in. Now, that's not to say I'm anti-wide receiver at all. When you look at this class, I think you have a plethora of players to choose from in terms of that do different things. I've talked about my number five wide receiver, a guy out of USC, Juju Smith-Schuster. He reminds me of a before the catch Anquan Boldin in the way he wins, working physically, short and intermediate, good routes, good hands. He's not as physical after the catch. He's able to move well after the catch, but he's not as physical because there's like three wide receivers in the history of the game that are as physical as Anquan Boldin. But he reminds me of Boldin in that way. Would that be somebody that could take over for a Larry Fitzgerald in a year, maybe 2 years? Zay Jones is another one kind of grown on me as a player because he worked in a really stupid offense at East Carolina, where he literally was their running game as well as their passing game. When you're seeing a guy catch, 15, 16 passes a game, because that's what he was doing. He had almost 160 receptions on the season. You look at it and you say, all right, what is this? Why is this happening? And they're force feeding him short routes and asking him to break tackles, make plays with the ball in his hands. He can do that at times, but it's not what he's best at. But he can win in this short and intermediate consistently, something he did in college. Again, another bigger body slot receiver that we're seeing, kind of the trend now, like Larry Fitzgerald. He's 6'2", 200 pounds. So can he, again, learn and then take over for Fitzgerald? The name I always come back to, and it's because I think it would fill two roles immediately, and that's Carlos Henderson out of Louisiana Tech. A dynamic playmaker this year as a junior. He ran a good time, 4.46. He meets the requirements that we've seen Arians want in a receiver, sub 4.5 40, 5.11, 200 pounds. So, a little bit shorter but stockier type build. Really nice short times, good burst. But what he does really well are two things. He wins with the ball in his hands. He's one of those guys that you can get him the ball anywhere on the field and he's going to make plays. And that's something that we see with Fitzgerald. Now, I'm not comparing Carlos Henderson because they're different type of wide receivers, different type of athletes, but you could get similar production out of that from Henderson. But he is a dynamic return man, like insanely good in both kick and I think he did punt returns as well, but I know for a fact kick returns, averaged over 32 yards per return, had two touchdowns last year, big time.
And he scored 23 touchdowns that last year, 19 yeah. catch, 19 in the air, two as rushers, and two, like, that's, over 1500 yards through the air, the 23 total touchdowns. He's good.
And what he allows you is he's a guy that you get, kind of in that, I don't have the in front of me, but whatever that third round pick is, I think it's like 77 or something like that. So you get him at that, in that mid 70s range, knowing well and good that he's really not going to play much as a rookie. He's going to return some kicks for you. Maybe you run a couple deep routes. Maybe you run, some wheel routes out of the slot for him because he does have that speed. But he's a guy that he needs work on how to run routes. He played at Louisiana Tech. They ask you to run like six routes there. Well, so he's got to learn to run all the routes. He's got to be able to, again, make those side adjustments, learn how to build a rapport with your quarterback and understand, what the defense is showing you and when you're supposed to make your break, or, if it's a post or a flag option, you have to know what your sight adjustments are and be able to do that. And for a lot of guys, that's what takes time. Again, and I'm not trying to pick on him, we saw Michael Floyd really not be able to grasp that consistently over 4 years. So is it fair, or can you expect a young player to do that quickly? No, I don't think it's fair. I don't think it should be expected, which is why I value a wide receiver on day two just as much as I would on day one, because I don't think a guy can come in and make waves in Bruce Arians' offense as a rookie wide receiver unless they're winning like John Brown did, which is what? Deep. You know, he wasn't a gimmick player, but he was a guy that they asked him to do one thing and he did it extremely well. He ran faster than everybody else on the field. So when you have...
And was able to get behind plays, right, yeah.
When you have that, you may not, you know, it's different, but when that's not your strength, then you have to be able to do the other things. So that's where that comes in. Other names that you might hear come about that, you know, I just don't see them fitting in that well right now, but Chad Hansen, Cooper Kupp, I just don't know if they're going to be kind of Arians guys. You know, they're different types of wide receivers. Again, I think both of them would be big slot receivers, but I'd rather take a guy, like I said, like Juju Smith-Schuster, Zay Jones, or Carlos Henderson over those guys.
Now, the question for me is at this point, you know, is he, if, because they're probably going to go receiver, that's something Arians likes to do. Continue going with the same type of player that Arians has had success with for the last several years. If we go back to, you know, Antonio Brown, Emmanuel Sanders, T.Y. Hilton, John Brown, there's definitely a type. You need to go that route just because that's Arians' way? Or do you see them actually trying to find someone with Fitz's build to perhaps fill that role? Or do you see that potentially being a guy, because he did this in Pittsburgh as well, you took a veteran receiver in Hines, bigger, tougher guy, and convince him to do more blocking. Younger guys to be the fast guys that get all the catches. I'm still not convinced that they're going to go for the bigger bodied guy. I'm not sure.
I think they gave Jerron, I think they have some faith in Jerron and they want to see what he looks like healthy again. Maybe that's what they're looking at, because like you said, it's really hard to convince players, especially younger players in this NFL where receivers are getting paid absurd amount of money based on, you know, putting up volume type numbers, not necessarily for being physical blocking guys or guys that, you know, catch 60 passes for, you know, 800 yards. They're not getting paid for that. So are you going to be able to get a Smith-Schuster? And I don't know him. I've never heard a negative thing about him. In fact, any report you read about Smith-Schuster is that he's a wonderful kid. So I'm not saying this as a knock. I'm just using an example. But are you going to be able to tell a Smith-Schuster, like, hey, we're going to throw you the ball, you know, 5 to 7 times a game. The rest of the time, we're going to ask you to block. Like, I don't like that's tough. So, you know, like you said, Jerron Brown's on the roster right now. Maybe they want to see how he looks healthy and then allow him to continue to be the guy. If Fitz decides to walk away, because we still don't even know if he's going to walk away. And then I think the other question, you know, is do they find a guy later in the draft like that you said? You know, those guys are hard to find because you're looking for what the one thing is that we have to understand, like from this point forward, is that you're not going to be able to replace Fitz. Like the guy that you bring in is not going to catch 100 passes or 110, whatever Fitz had this year. Like that's not what's going to happen. That's because it's Larry Fitzgerald. It's not because it's what they want out of that position. If you go back to Pittsburgh, when Hines Ward retired, that position didn't go away. That position just got reintegrated into the offense, and those targets went to Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders. You know, in fact, those targets probably are going to go to Jermaine Gresham. So when it's all said and done, I don't know if they're going to want to spend a draft pick on replacing Fitz if they feel like they've already got guys in place or they can, you know, tweak the offense a little bit in order to fix it. Real quick, though, I just want to give two more names to kind of go into that Arians profile that we've talked about. Kady Cannon out of Baylor. We all know Baylor wide receiver issues coming out, and it's that they just don't know how to run routes. But legit 4.4 flat speed, 5.11, smaller guy, 180 pounds. But I mean, he is a blazer when you know timing wise. And then the other guy that I'm trying to remember his name right now, off the top of my head, and I can't. So, but there was another guy. I wish I could remember.
Well, I wrote a couple. I think it was last week or so. Basically, I looked at the Arians profile, the kind of size speed combo production, and I have a few guys that might fit even all round one all the way down to round seven. I had Ohio State's Curtis Samuel in round two, fast 4.3 speed. Like you, Carlos Henderson, I like him in the third. I put D.D. Westbrook from Oklahoma in round four.
Yes, thank you. D.D. Westbrook was another. That's who I couldn't remember. Thank you.
And then West Virginia Shelton Gibson, his 40 time not great because it was 4.5, and that's kind of like the high end that Arians likes, but his for game tape is so much faster than what that shows. Like he's fast. He plays fast.
Gibson, again, I just don't know if he's. I don't know if he's a guy that is going to play as well as he did at West Virginia because of how he was used there. But he is definitely a guy, like you said, he's definitely a guy that could fit into the Arians mold. And his times weren't that bad all around. You know, like you said, the 4.51 is a little higher, or 4.5 flat was a little higher than what you want, but he's a guy that he moves well laterally and he can do some things with the ball in his hand. So, you know, it's one of those things that these spread offenses are making it really, really hard to kind of track players and where they're winning at in their routes. And so they do tend to run free more often than not.
That's enough about receivers. Let's wrap that up. And in our next segment, coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, we're going to be talking about the running backs and who could possibly be a candidate for the Cardinals to take and in what round, who are candidates to back up David Johnson. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. If you can recall, probably a couple of months ago, I talked to you about my new Casper mattress. Want to talk to you about that again one more time. Casper, the mattress that's kind of catching the internet by storm. One of these memory foam mattresses, you know, this got thousands of hours of engineers developing it. It's got supportive memory foams, sleep stories. It got just the right amount of sink and just the right amount of bounce. It also allows you to sleep cool. And the great part, it's at a great price. It's got great reviews. And in fact, you know, over 20,000 reviews, average of 4.8 stars. It's becoming one of the internet's favorite mattresses. And the best part of it is that, you know, they're willing to give you 100 nights. I didn't need 100 nights to tell you that I was keeping it. But if you need it, they're willing to give you 100 nights to test it out risk-free. And if you don't absolutely love your mattress, they'll pick it up and they'll refund you everything. Now, my Casper, you know, we had years and years on one of those other more expensive memory foam mattresses. We got the Casper, and it didn't take. I didn't need to have a whole 100 days to know that I was keeping it. I have great night's sleep. I'm sleeping great. I'm waking up and refreshed, and it was a fraction of the price. Now, the great part is that, you know, it's American made, and for my listeners here, our listeners here on Rise Up Sea Red, that we've got a special offer for you. If you test out the Casper, if you head over to Casper.com and you can get $50, that's $50 off the price of any mattress purchase. And you do so, you go to Casper.com/CRED and you use the code CRED at checkout, and you're going to get yourself $50 off that purchase of the mattress. And 100 days to test it out, risk-free, no problem at all. If you don't absolutely love it, you can send it back, and then you'll get all your money back. So, again, test it out. Head over to casper.com/CRED. Use CRED when you check out, and you'll get $50 off that mattress purchase. The next segment now on Rise Up CRED. Let's talk running backs. At running back, the Cardinals aren't looking for – they're not looking for a starter. Obviously, they're not. They've got David Johnson. They're looking for someone who can back him up. Now, they already have some players in the fold. They've got Kerwin Williams that showed he can be productive. He probably can be the Stephon Taylor of this year. You know, he can fill that role. Might be back. But in particular, Steve Keim said that he wanted to find a running back with the same type of skill set. Obviously, probably not quite as elite. Someone who can catch the ball out of the backfield. At least in my mind, probably, obviously, I think round one is out of the question. Round two may be out of the question. So we're looking back of T2 and day three. Who are some guys? There's a couple of names that – now, one of the names that I know that I've heard that they like, and I've seen him in mock drafts go into the second round, so that makes me seem that's less likely. But who are the pass-catching running backs who can not only – gain yards on the ground, but can not only catch the dump offs, but do some of the same things that that David Johnson can, and not just catch the screen passes and the dump offs in the flats, but actually line up at receiver and do more. Dwayne Gallman, isn't he one of those guys? And who else is out there?
Obviously, at the top of the draft, you have Christian McCaffrey, but you'd have to take him at 13. I've seen comps anywhere from like Marshall Faulk to I said he reminds me a little bit of Tiki Barber, like without the fumbling and things like that. We know how electric he is and as a receiver. So the question becomes at what price. I mean, you and I would probably agree he's not going to be an option at 13. If they took him, I mean, you're talking about a guy that literally does everything as well as David Johnson does, but it just cost doesn't make sense there. But man, it would be fun to see a dual backfield of David Johnson and Christian McCaffrey, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Another guy that is really athletic and has kind of risen up boards despite having 200 carries in his college career, Alvin Kamara is a guy that makes sense. I know they had a visit with him at the combine, I believe it was. It made sense to me because he's a guy similar build to DJ, not quite as tall, 5'10", but 215 pounds, you know, mid-4 guy, huge vertical jump and you know, vertical and broad jump measure explosiveness. So that makes sense. You know, a guy that can be explosive with the ball in his hands, super lightly used. So that would make sense. But again, I've seen end of round one, beginning of round two. So would they take a running back at 45? I would like to.
They'd have to really.
Right. I would like to think that would be tough. But who knows? I mean, so Kamara's another guy. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about him, but Joe Mixon is a guy. I you know, there's nothing to say about off the field. Like, that's – we're not going to talk about it. But he's a
and
guy.
And aside from that, he probably – historically looked like he's probably off their board.
Right.
But go on. Right.
But he's a guy, I mean, legitimately, when you look at Joe Mixon, he's the closest thing. And we recorded with Emory Hunt last night, who is a former college running back, and we were talking about it. And he was, and not in a negative way, but he said, you know, David Johnson and Joe Mixon run alike in that they look like wide receivers playing running back when they run the football, because they're guys that like to stop their feet when they make their moves, as opposed to, you know, you look at a guy like Le'Veon Bell, who seems like he's floating as he's kind of going to the hole and making moves in the hole, whereas David Johnson's a very sudden stop and start type of guy, like a wide receiver. And, he, you know, that makes sense because that's what David was until he got, I think, what, year two in college? So so that would make sense. Again, historically speaking, I don't even know if he's draftable for the Arizona Cardinals. So I think it's a, you know, kind of a moot point anyways. But when it comes to complete package, he would kind of be a really nice fit on the field. Again, this is just completely on the field. One guy that doesn't get talked about enough, but he can do a lot of different things, and that's Kareem Hunt out of Toledo. He's a big dude, 5'10", 200. He lost weight down from 228 and was 216 pounds at the combine.
Kareem Hunt, you said?
Yes. He's a guy that was outstanding as a sophomore, like legitimate talk of being a top, you know, two round back as a sophomore. And then he got fat, and, you know, you don't think it happens with college athletes, but it does. And he, you know, he went from averaging 8 yards a carry on over 200 rushing attempts as a sophomore to less than 5.5 yards per carry on only 179 rushing attempts. So, you know, that regression showed, and it was, a lot of it was athleticism. But he's a guy that if he can keep his weight down, he's a guy that fits what they like to do, because he can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's a more natural running back, and he's not a guy that will cede carries from David Johnson, but he is a guy that can effectively run between the tackles and take some of the body blows that will be stacking up away from David Johnson, which I think is really important as we go forward here, because you're going to want to start to see him, you know, you're going to have to start making a decision on him, like, what are we going to do? Because I think he's going to be 27 at the end of this year, if I remember right. And so a 27-year-old running back looking for a probably a 4 or 5 year contract extension, that's going to be interesting to watch going forward. So those are all guys on day two. Obviously McCaffrey's going to go day one, but day two, that you could kind of see them going towards. Gallman's a day three type of guy that you talked about a little bit. A couple interesting names to remember. One is Elijah Hood. He's out of North Carolina. Again, another guy that was supposed to take that next step. He had a fantastic sophomore season, just under 1500 yards rushing, good receiving threat. And then this year, I don't know what happened. I guess their quarterback just kind of drug the whole team down, but you know, he struggled at North Carolina this year. So he is a very capable back out of the backfield, and he's a bruising kind of downhill runner. He would fit it. And again, he's big, 6 foot, over 230 pounds. So like, he's a really big dude, but I think he before his injury was supposed to be like an athletic freak of nature. He didn't test. So I'm interested to see if it's still true, but that's one to watch. And then the last one is a guy who's a little bit smaller in terms of stature, but he's 215 pounds. So he's kind of thick and rocked up. Is Jeremy McNichols out of Boise State. He's a guy that I think can be able to, again, you're going to be able to throw him the ball out of the backfield. He'll be able to come in. He'll be able to run those zone plays that the Cardinals run a lot of and do some different things. He's a talented back. I don't have a great feel this year on the running backs because after Fournette, McCaffrey, and Dalvin Cook, I don't know where teams value these guys. You know, like I said, Kamara's got 200 career attempts, but we've seen him mocked in the first round. Joe Mixon's obviously got the off-the-field stuff, but I've seen him mocked in the first round. Kareem Hunt, I know people that think he is one of the four best running backs in this class. Curtis Samuel is listed as a running back or a wide receiver. You have Deontay Foreman, who ran for over 2,000 yards at Texas. You just have a plethora of players that can do different things and do them well. I don't know where their value is in the NFL because of, the running back position, one, but two, what teams will want out of these guys. So when you look at the Cardinals from a Cardinals perspective, those are the guys that catch the ball well out of the backfield and can keep the chains moving. And I purposefully picked those guys because they're slightly different runners than David Johnson in that they're a little more physical in terms of hit the hole and go forward as opposed to trying to make moves in and around the hole and make big plays happen. They're the type of guys, more similar to a Chris Johnson was at the end of his career, where he may not be able to break it, but if you say, oh, here's a 2-yard run, this is what it's blocked for, he's going to get 2 or 3 yards. And that's what a lot of those guys are.
And that'll wrap up the first, that'll wrap up the running backs. Coming up next on Rise Up C-Red, we're going to talk about the tight ends and the offensive line. Then that'll wrap up our show. So that's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. And we're going to wrap up the show talking tight ends and offensive line. Two positions that, I'm not sure what exactly we're going to get from the position. Tight end first, we'll look at the size profile. If there's one thing we've seen with the Cardinals, they go with big tight ends. And we know that they really aren't into the simple move tight end who only catches passes. The tight end position has to be able to block. And if we look at since Bruce Arians took over, they drafted Gerald Christian as Mr. Irrelevant, more as an H-back. But he didn't make the roster. But every tight end that they've had on their roster has been at least 6'4 and 250. In fact, the only player under 260 in that group is Rob Housler. But pretty much it's 6'5, 260 is kind of the profile they like. And so if you're looking for a big tight end with the potential to catch passes but can contribute right away in terms of a blocker, recall that's why they drafted Troy Nicholas, is his size and his ability to be a good NFL blocker was really why they drafted in the second round. There's some names that you could look at. Some early, obviously O.J. Howard near the top. We know he can block because he played in Alabama and was not used the way you think that he would use him, considering his skill set, because he has great hands. He's an athletic freak, but they used him in Alabama, much like the Cardinals like to use their tight ends in Arizona.
Yeah, and I still think he's an option at 13. I just don't think he's going to be there at 13. But Howard's the prototypical Bruce Arians desire at tight end. I just don't see him being an option this draft because of the class as a whole. And he is a unique and dynamic talent because he is such a good blocking tight end that maybe, you can look past his unproductiveness at the position that is so demanded in the NFL by so many teams. So David Njoku is the next guy. I don't know if he'll be on the Cardinals board. He's another freak of nature physical specimen at 6'4", just under 250. So he has all the qualities. He's just not a great blocker. He's not an unwilling or bad blocker. He's just not good at it yet. So I think that's one that we could probably cross off the list, because I don't think he'll be there at
he probably won't be there at 45.
Anyway, so, I mean, are you going to take him at 13? I'd have a hard time.
It's hard to think that they'd even take Howard at 13. It's out there, but considering how they use it, you wouldn't think that they would put that premium on the position. Adam Shaheen is a name that's kind of come up, and he's a monster of a man, which makes you think, would they go the second round route with Shaheen, who's probably, from all indications I've seen, not going to go past round two?
You know, and that's just crazy to me, because he is, I mean, he's big, 6'6",
278.
Yeah, 280, but he's not like a super athletic freak of nature in that sense. Like he ran like a 4.82, so he's not exactly fast. You know what I'm saying? Like, but he does a really nice job, like you said. He's a physical guy. I think the question you have is, can, again, kind of like we've talked about with other positions, can you take another kind of projection at the tight end position? A guy that, you know, you did it with Nicholas, now you're going to do it with Shaheen, a kid out of Ashland who didn't exactly dominate his level of play. I mean, he was definitely a very good player, but didn't necessarily dominate. That's my question on Shaheen more than anything. But he is a guy that is interesting. I just don't know if you can afford to take him at, you know, 45.
You go to round three, a name that I've got there. This is one of those posts I did, a tight end, a big tight end for every round. So I looked at the tight ends there. Who meets the physical profile? And then match it kind of round. Jordan Leggett from Clemson. He's got the frame to be a good blocker. He just really hasn't done much and hasn't been real good at it. But do you think the Cardinals, in terms of athleticism and catching ability, he's a big. He can be a big play guy.
Yeah, and the Cardinals. It's back to the Jace Amaro thing that we talked about with Jace all those years ago. Was that it's not that they can't block, because they haven't been asked to block. So that's where you kind of, the disconnect is, they haven't been asked to do it consistently in their career. So it's more that we just don't know if they can do it more than they can't do it. Leggett's an interesting one, because he was kind of like the security blanket for Deshaun Watson over the years. So he's definitely a guy that's interesting. I like Leggett a lot. I just don't know if round three is the spot for him. You know, this is an interesting class, and I think you can get a guy, for instance, so you don't take Howard in one, you pass on Shaheen in two, or Shaheen goes before the Cardinals pick in two. You can get a guy like George Kittle out of Iowa. And again, much like Alabama, we know those guys can block, because that's literally all they have to do at their position. But Kittle's actually a talented receiver. He just wasn't used very much. He's a guy 6'4", just under 250, but he ran a 4.5 240. He's actually faster than the freak David Njoku, you know, timed at. But again, he went to Iowa, so he, you know, got 30, or he caught, you know, 45 passes in his entire career. But he is a dynamic and effective blocker at the position. He's a guy that, you know, you just kind of want to, it's weird, but you just like, okay, I want to watch this guy block, because he's very physical and he's very aggressive at the point of attack. And then he does do one thing extremely well that we see the the Cardinals really like out of their tight ends. He catches the ball in the red zone. Kittle, like I said, 43 career receptions. He has 10 career touchdowns. That's a good little, you know, nugget to put away for that. So he's an interesting one. Another guy that I was going to, that I would take at 45, but this is again a leap of faith in the Troy Nicholas mold, would be Bucky Hodges out of Virginia Tech. Like a former Virginia Tech player that was drafted by the Arizona Cardinals, he was a tight end, or he was a quarterback in high school, and he moved to tight end in college.
Instead of the other way around.
Right. Extremely, extremely athletic for his frame. 6'7", 260, but he ran a 4.5. 40. He is a freak of nature when you look at his size and speed. The question becomes, again, was not asked to block much. You know, he's more of a mismatch tight end than a guy that you look to, you know, put in line and block. So again, for the Cardinals, does he fit? Probably not. But if we're going to have to take him, it would have to be high. It would have to be like at 45. A name to know and to remember, and that's because he's a big dude that comes from a heavy run blocking team. He wasn't exactly dynamic as a run blocker, but he does a good job and he understands how to do it. And that's Jeremy Sprinkle out of Arkansas, 6'5", 250, fairly athletic, just under a 4.7 40, you know, at that size. The question you have with Sprinkle is kind of like Kittle. What is he as a player? Sprinkle had 67 career receptions at Arkansas. Again, you play in those run-heavy offenses, so they're more utilized as an extra blocker and things like that. That's why I think they kind of fit with what Arizona would do. Sprinkle's probably a guy that you can get, you know, in the fourth, maybe the fifth round, but he's an interesting fit for this team. A guy that I really liked, but I'm 110% completely out on, is Jake Butt out of Michigan. I believe now he's had his second ACL tear. And I'm done taking risk on players that have had multiple knee injuries. You know, if you want to talk about late.
I mean, Michael Roberts is a guy that also came up in some of the visits. Another guy out of Toledo, 6'4", 270. Apparently already had a private workout with the Cardinals. And another guy, big, so he's got the frame to block. And he, like you said, the red zone. How's this for a red zone target? 45 catches last season. 16 touchdowns. Yeah, that's not bad.
Exactly. And he's a guy on day three. So, you know, when you look at day three, yep. that's my struggle. That's the one struggle I have with Howard. And again, I think Howard's one of probably the 10 best players in this draft. So if you have the option to take him at 13, you're not going to have to sell me one bit. But like Jess has said numerous times in numerous articles, and, you know, we've talked about on the show before, it's not a position that the Cardinals utilize much. So can you invest $28 million and then the 13th pick in a tight end? Probably not. And the reason why is because we just named guys in the second round at 45, in the third round, whenever that third round pick is. And now we've talked about guys in Jeremy Sprinkle and Michael Roberts that you can get in the fourth and fifth round that probably will be able to give you the same type of output and production that you would get from the guy at 13. Not because they're as good of football players, but because of how the Arizona Cardinals utilize them.
And wrapping it up with the offensive line, I'd wouldn't you say it's probably safe to say that they're not going to target a center in this draft unless it's a guy who has some positional flexibility to be able to play some guard as well? Would that be fair to say? So we can kind of, unless there's a center out there that kind of fits that, we're not going to see that in this draft, are we?
The only guy I would mention is Pat Elflein out of, what is the position? Oh, Ohio State. He's an interesting one. And then Ethan Pochick out of LSU. I don't know if Pochick can play center in the NFL because he's 6'6", which is just unusually tall.
That's really large.
So, but dynamic run blocker, has played guard before. I think he can, I think he's a versatile kind of player that you can get at the center slash guard position that can do some different things for you. Elfline's a guy that's, again, played both positions, center guard, same type of thing. Not as big, kind of in the Evan Bain mold, 6'3", 303 pounds. You know, can very good run blocker, less effective pass blocking, but again, I think those offenses that they came from also don't necessarily lend themselves to helping them as pass blockers. But those are the two center prospects that I think might be on the board for them.
At guard, the Cardinals, this is a position where, if we're going in and assuming that there's going to be a position taken, that guard is going to be one of them for two reasons. Well, one, they're going to have Evan Bain, who's not really a guard playing guard. Now, he can play guard, but they didn't draft him to be the guard. They drafted him to be a center, which leaves a void after 2017 at right guard, and Mike Iupati's turning 30 years old. So the guard position is going to become somewhat important. So it's not necessarily that they need to draft day one. So Forrest Lamp, as much as you love him, probably, one, not going to be on the board at 45, and two, probably not the player they should be grabbing at number 13, right?
You know, you're never going to convince me not to draft Forrest Lamp at 13 just because, again, I think he's probably one of the 15 best players in this class. That all being said, we talk about it at a number of positions. Offensive line's one you can convince me that you can continue to invest in, but you've, you know, invested two first-round picks, two giant free agent contracts, and then I think you're at five day three picks right now on your offensive line in four, you know, in four seasons. Can you invest another first-round pick in that offensive line? It is just, you know, it's hard to say. All that being said, Lamp is worth it. You know, so if they took him, I'd be 110% on board with it. He's a versatile offensive lineman, played left guard in college, and I have now subscribed to the Green Bay Packers philosophy of just draft left tackles that played left tackle in college and then put them all along the offensive line because they're likely already great pass blockers. So then you just have to work with them in the run game. So Lamp fills that role, but I don't think he's a guy that they're going to take that highly.
So that brings us to guys like Dorian Johnson out of Pitt, Dan Feeney out of Indiana. Where do these guys fit? Too,
right? Didn't they?
That's right. Oh, and that's on top of the guys that we've heard that they're interested. They're interested in Isadora. They're interested in Nico Siragusa. There are four guard names, kind of all over the place. The Michigan guy as well, Kyle Kalick or something. I can't remember the name.
Yeah. So Siragusa is interesting because he's like a complete slob when he plays, but he's just a mauler, does a really good job. I think he's a day three guy where he goes. So if you pick him in round four, I think that's a nice fit. Danny Isadora is one of the more athletic in this class, not necessarily overall, but just athletic guards in this class. At 6'3 and 306. He's interesting because I don't know if he fits what they've done before So it would be a little bit of a offshoot in terms of type of blocking schemes that they run, but it'll be interesting to see what they think of him. Dan Feeney would be like the first guy I would draft at 45, except I think he's had 3 concussions already. So I just don't know if you can again, concussions, ACLs, those type of things concern me. But he's a fantastic run blocker, mauler, you know, all of the buzzwords that you hear from guys. And then Taylor Moten's another guy from Western Michigan that I love. I think he can play tackle, but if you get him to play guard, I think he's going to do a really nice job and end up, you know, being a very successful player in the NFL. The question I have for him is, can he move laterally enough? So is he a right guard only where he's not going to be asked to pull at all? And then if that's true, then that's not a guy that's going to be available, right, to replace Upati in a couple years. So then you're back to having to draft a guard again. Whereas if you take a Feeney or a Lamp, even a Isadora, even though he didn't do it much, you know, he moves pretty well. Those guys all more fit the bill. The one name to remember and to watch out for is Isaac Asiata out of Utah.
I've seen a couple of clips and he is, wow.
Yeah, so very, you know, power heavy guy. He's a guy that you put at your left guard position now to back up Mike Upati, and then in 1 to 2 years, he's the guy that takes over. Pulls quite a bit in that Utah scheme on backside powers and then counters. So he's done it before. So again, that's a good name to know moving forward in that one for the Cardinals as a day three type of guy. Tackles, I don't know. Like, are they going to invest in another tackle early? That's why I think guys like Moten and Lamp make sense, because they could,
if and when they let go, if and when they move on from Veldeer, who we assume is going to be the right tackle, because Humphrey's going to be the future at left tackle, they're going to need someone to step in there, whether that's a bridge to a higher guy later. But yeah, that you need someone, not necessarily to play this year, you need someone looking ahead to 2018 probably.
So a couple just names to know, maybe they like Cole Toner, or maybe they're looking again later in the draft. There's 2 developmental guys that I really, really like. The first guy's from Bucknell, and his name is escaping me right now. I've talked about him like 400 times, though, so it'll come to me in a second. But the other guy to know is Adam Bisnawati out of Pittsburgh. Again, a very violent player. Bisnawati is a guy that he didn't test as well as I would hope. He didn't, like, nothing from his offseason really came out the way I wanted it to, but he is a guy that is kind of a he reminds me a little bit of Eric Winston. Like, it doesn't make sense how he wins, and it's not pretty, but he wins consistently and he does it really, really well. So that's a guy. Okay. And then
Julian Davenport, is that the guy that you're looking for?
Yes, Julian Davenport out of Bucknell, 6'6", 320. Dude has fire hoses for arms, 36.5-inch arms. He was really good on the All-Star circuit. He's a guy, he started a ton at Bucknell, 44 starts at left tackle, which is, you know, insane. I think he's a right tackle in the NFL. He's not like an overt athlete or anything like that, but he's super long and he's got a really, really like nice initial punch where he's strong. And then he anchors pretty well on the backside. I really would like to see him if he's there, because he's a guy that with his measurables and size, he's a guy that gets drafted like late day 3, early day 4, because a team thinks that they can turn him into a left tackle. again, for the Cardinals, I think he could be, you know, kind of that guy that replaces Jared Valdir in 1 or 2 years at right tackle. And then, you know, you give him a 3-year, you know, $12 million contract to lock him up for, you know, a total of like 7 years, and you get maybe 5 years out of them, but it ends up working out well. Those are the two names, because I just don't think that they're going to invest in an offensive lineman highly again. Do you?
I wouldn't think so, based on the, especially with the need to add defensive players. They do need to address the defensive backfield. They need to look at cornerback. They need to address linebacker. So after, you know, that's one of those things, that receiver, it seems to be lower on the totem pole this year, and they have guys in the house that they like. So they are developing guys with John Wetzel, Cole Toner, Givens Price. So there are a number of players that they have in house that they can move up. So it's not, they kind of have themselves a nice little farm system on the offensive line right now. So unless there's a player that they really love, maybe a guard on day two.
Yeah, like but 80, May, 45 would be super rich. I could see it in round three. I would be surprised at 45, though.
Right. Right. With the we figure round one is probably, it's either defensive or quarterback, and then round two is probably the other way around.
Right.
And if they don't get the quarterback in round one, they're probably going to go after a corner in round two, based on what you said. You know, there's lots of good cornerbacks, but outside of Marshon Lattimore, you probably don't want to be spending your – you don't want to – end of round one, round two is kind of all the same thing. But we'll talk about that more next week.
Exactly. So I think with the Cardinals in this offense – you're looking at day two players outside of the quarterbacks, and we've highlighted those. And then honestly, day three is just a complete 100 crapshoot. Like, nobody has any idea what they're looking for, how they want to invest and build the depth of this team, because we've seen them continually pick the same positions over and over in those rounds. So, you know, we've seen them double up on offensive line. We've seen them double up in the secondary. We've seen them double up at the linebacker position. I will say this, and I wrote about this for tomorrow. The list of people that they've brought in on the defense for their official 30 visits is really interesting. And we're going to talk about this next week. So a little, you know, plug for next week and everything, but we're going to talk about this next week. But out of the 10 official visits they've had, we know for their quarterbacks, one guy is a first-round pick, and that's Reuben Foster. The other five linebackers, and they've only brought in linebackers, the other five linebackers that we know are guys that interest me, but they're all day three and undrafted free agent types. So are they planning on those athletic linebackers to try to get them late or undrafted and just hedging that early in the process? That's what's going to be interesting to watch.
And so that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast as we talked NFL draft on the offensive side of the ball. We'll be back next week to talk defense, and the week after that, which is draft week, we will be doing our yearly mock draft of his picks, my picks, and then talk about who we think the teams should pick. And with that, you can find us anywhere on the internet if you know where to find us. The Rise Up Sea Red podcast you can find on Seth's side, on Revenge of the Birds, on my site, cardswire.com. It's on Blog Talk Radio. It's on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio. And, of course, you can find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Rise Up Sea Red. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We talked NFL draft with the offense, and next week we'll be back. We're doing defense. And go Cardinals.